and fine edition of My So-Called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. I'm not in my usual studio. I'm actually here on site at essentially the Night Attack Studios, a.k.a. Brian's, I guess, house.
We've hijacked BB Live.
And I'm joined by Mr. Tom Merritt once again.
Hey, y'all. How's it going?
How's it going, good sir?
I'm good, man. We're having a good time here.
It's been a very crazy night. This is actually sort of the latest night, like my voice is gravelly.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I feel it's going to be, like...
You got that low...
Well, I'm waiting. I'm just waiting to start busting to some Tom Waits.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm waiting for, to hear either Tom Merritt just start singing some, like, random Tom Waits song I never heard and that. What is the... Here's something I should ask you, just as we're going to music, just as a random thing. What is your favorite low gravelly artist? Like, the artist that's typically known for that low gravelly
voice. Right, like your Barry White, Tom Waits.
Yep.
And it's probably between those two, actually. Barry White's he's the sexier.
Yes.
Well, I hesitate to even say that, because Tom Waits is damn sexy.
Well, Tom Waits is...
Barry White is hands down the, like, if you want to have, like, the sexy, low-down romantic time,
yeah,
you go Barry White. But if you want to have, like, some more interesting, you know, mm-hmm, not romantic per se, but a different kind of gritty... sexy time.
Well, because Tom Waits is not afraid to go weird.
No, exactly. And it's even in his most recent album, I don't know if you heard, like, Chicago or
those tunes
off the last one that was out like a year and a half ago or so. He's still got it, in my opinion.
Oh, no.
Because the lyrics, and because here's the thing, right? Frank Sinatra in his later years was a parody of Frank Sinatra, and he had to do duets because you're like, Frank can't hit the high notes anymore. Tom Waits doesn't freaking matter.
No.
As he gets older, he just gets better.
By the way, I know you haven't been on in a while, but this is a explicit podcast. So if you need a curse, by all means, feel. What's funny is the first time I got you on, I think I said this exact same thing, because it's been a while since I've had you on the podcast. I mean, the last time we chatted, you were still part of Twit, and you were still doing...
Was that South by Southwest the last time?
No. Well, I mean, okay. So to go through the history of me meeting Tom, like, I always remember the first time I met you was, I think it was it was definitely my first South By, but it was one of your first South Bys for sure. Maybe not.
Well, my first South By was in 1993.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's
when
right.
I lived in Austin
for music.
But then I came back to South By after leaving Austin for the first time in 2006.
That might have been the first year, because you did a live Buzz Out Loud.
Yeah.
Veronica had come up as well. And Leo that year had been – that was the year of the freaking, like – you know, staff.
The first of the live the, streaming.
The yeah, Wanda yeah. Odin camera kind
right.
of thing, where he just had, you know, Sauron's eye and focus on everything. And he, you know, did the whole famous crowd surfing and all that kind of stuff. And so that's when I first met you at that day. I met you. I met Molly Wood. I met, what's his name? Jason as well.
Oh, Jason Howell. Yeah,
Jason Howell. I met you all that kind in very close proximity, because you guys were literally coming in that day. And I was at the convention center. I just walked by, saw, hey, cool, Tom. But it wouldn't be until you either A, left Buzz Out Loud and had been on TNT, or was kind of in that transition period, that I would actually get you on the podcast.
Okay, yeah.
Because it was definitely during the Twit days. It was definitely during that point in time. And what's funny is, now that I get you back on again, you're now in another, like, the beginnings of another transition period.
Yeah, yeah. I got new shows that are starting to actually finally feel not totally new. because they've at least been on for 2 months, but yeah, still pretty fresh.
But what I like about this sort of thing. So for those who have no idea, and have sort of lived in this weird podcast bubble, Tom essentially had left Twit. For lack of better words, your contract wasn't renewed.
Right.
That's the best way to. I mean, that's
right. End of December, my contract with Twit was up and it wasn't renewed, so I was independent at that
right.
point.
The fear I had as a listener, I should say this right up front, was that you weren't going to do anything after that. Like, that was good. Well, okay.
Actually, I had people advise me to do that.
How long? Really?
Yeah. They're like, just take a break. Just take some time off. And I knew myself better than that. For one thing, I had friends like Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young, who were like hell-bent to, like, let's do stuff. And so Brian and I started Chord Killers before my contract was even up.
How was that received, out of curiosity?
By the fans, it was received very well. People were very excited about that. And we waited until frame rate was done,
right,
until we'd done our last frame rate. And we got a little flack for doing it, but we were doing a beta, and even though we had launched our Patreon for it, we never collected any money on it in December. It was more just us trying out the show. In retrospect, maybe we shouldn't have done it so early because it did step on some toes, but we didn't mean it to. We just meant it to be like, we're prepping the show and we want to beta it and try it.
We want to make sure to tell people it's coming on. Yeah. The content's here. We're not
going
away.
And then January is when we actually launched it for real. Like, okay, it's not beta anymore.
Now here's the question so you end up leaving Twit that last day, that last kind of final speech. I think you had referenced like Doctor Who in that, if I'm mistaken.
Yeah, I referenced all kinds of,
which is cool. What was awesome about that episode, the last thing.
Lord of the Rings too, I think.
It was very touching. It was very I wasn't crying per se, but that doesn't mean it wasn't emotional.
It
was tough because, you know, thankfully at that point we knew you were going to do something else and you're still going to do something, but for a little while there was that period that this is the last time I'm here to Tom talk about tech.
And yeah,
you know,
and I don't think anyone meant it to feel like, oh, this is the last time the last thing you'll hear from Tom. And
No, it wasn't.
I wonder if I didn't overdo it. I didn't mean to leave it as some sort of overly emotional goodbye. But at the same time, Justin and Brian both were like, look, if you're going to go out graciously. Go out like Conan did.
No, it was perfectly gracious.
And so I wanted to do something inspirational and positive and like, let's go make something amazing. And that's what.
It was a perfect way to end that show and a perfect way to kind of, you know, end your tenure.
Well, and the show's
there.
Not over.
No, of course.
It was just me leaving it.
Right. But let me put it this way. Not to say what Mike Elgin's doing is bad or good, you know. I'll let the listener be the judge of that.
Let me say something about that.
Sure.
A lot of people have bashed Mike, and I don't think that's fair.
No, I don't think it's fair either.
Because I think Mike's doing a fantastic job with the show. I really do, and he is different. And that's always going to happen when you change hosts. Is people who like one type of host are not going to like the next host. But I hope people give it a chance.
Because, and I agree.
Because what Mike is doing is really good. He's a smart guy and a really good journalist.
No, yeah. This is not even saying like bashing on that. The thing is that when Mike came on, it is a different show.
Sure.
And there's a lot of people who really, really dug how you brought in tech, how you did it, how you analyzed it, how you kind of conveyed it. Me personally, it was sort of my it was my way of saying, you know what, I'm not going to follow an RSS feed. I'm just going to see what Tom has seen, hear that audio, and that's going to be my equivalent for an RSS feed. And it was fun. It was interesting. You always had good guests on. You always had something interesting coming up. And so my fear was, at that very moment, you know, when you announced it, it wasn't that you were going to do anything. Of course, you'd still be doing Sword and Laser. Of course, you'd still be doing, you know, everything else you're going to do. The fear for me as a listener was, I am never going to hear Tom talk about tech again in a more formal podcast sense. And that's
thing was, though, if you remember, some people may remember this, probably not too many. When I left Buzz Out Loud, there was a 2-week gap before I started a Twit. I went on to Ustream every day during the work week, and I would read the headlines I had picked that day. If I had done a tech news show, this is what I would have talked about. And I sort of chatted about it with the audience, like, is this the kind of thing you want to hear about? But I couldn't stop myself. And I knew that going into this, like, look, January 2nd, I'm going to get up and I'm going to read all the RSS feeds, and I'm going to know in my head, like, these are the stories I should be talking about, so I should just keep doing it. And that's what I did.
Was it more because that's what you wanted to do, which, I mean, it sounds like you did. Or was it a little bit of, I've been doing this for years, I really can't stop anymore?
I guess it's a little of that second, but it's the second proceeds from the first.
Right.
Like, if it was something I didn't enjoy doing, it would have been like, oh, thank goodness I've been released, right? Like, all of us have had that feeling when, there was something we were doing and then beyond our control, we didn't have to do it anymore and we feel relieved. And that was not my feeling at all. I mean, on January 2nd, when I started doing Daily Tech News Show, I didn't feel like, oh, I really need to do this because it's what I've always done. I felt like, okay, this is what I do. Boom, boom, boom. The only thing that was a stress at all was, now I have to do it later in the day. My routine is off, right? I'm changing when I do things.
But it's not like you
and have... I have to publish the feed. I can't just give it to Jason.
That's true.
And let him take care of it.
But it's not
other
like,
than that, everything else was the same for me.
But it's not like you haven't, I mean, let me put it this way. when we talk about television shows, the kiss of death is usually when they shift, you know, time slots and they move to like the Friday time slot. TNT as a podcast, I think at one point it was in the morning. At the very beginning, it was in the evening.
It was at 2:30 and then it was at 3.
It's gone. It moved a lot. So for you, yes, you talk about when it Daily Tech News is like, I have to get used to being later in the evening. You've already done that before.
Yeah,
that
no, makes any sense. It was, a little bit of an adjustment for the audience. More for me, like, I had been doing Tech News Today at 10 a.m. for so long.
Right.
I knew exactly, like, by the clock what I should be doing at any given point, right? Like, I should have my news fuse written by now. I should have my two discussion stories notes made by now. I should be showered by now. Like, all of that was – I didn't have to think about it. And so all of a sudden, all of that was off.
So do you tend not to shower for Daily Tech News? Is that something we can
do? No, it's actually easier for Daily Tech News because I can shower before I ever actually start working on it since it's a little later in the afternoon.
So anyways, after you leave Twit, you know, it's a sad thing. You then do the Daily Tech News show, sort of this almost like TNT, almost.
What I do, and this, some people may not think this is fair, but I think it's fair because it's what I do, is these are the things that I know how to do. I know how to write headlines. I know how to pick stories of the day. I know how to discuss stories. And so I just did those. And honestly, it's the same thing I did at Tech News Today. When I came over from Buzz Out Loud, I did the same things I did for Buzz Out Loud at Tech News Today. And it grew and evolved as time went on and I added co-hosts. And so I'm just doing the same thing.
No, that's not.
I know you're not saying that, but anybody it's listening is like, you're just ripping it off. I'm like, I'm ripping it off for myself.
No, what I actually like about more, like, this is what's funny. I enjoy Daily Tech News actually more than I enjoy TNT.
Why is that?
The reason I enjoy it more, and I kept thinking about this as, you know, as I've gone through and sort of listened to the podcast and over again as it came back. What I dig about it more is that you have essentially, you know, you go through the headlines now.
Mm-hmm.
If someone wants to chime in on it, you let them chime in.
Yeah.
After you've done that, you have the one topic you kind of want to dig into, and you dig into that one topic. And it's something that kind of happens when you have a very short time span of a podcast, like a 30-minute to 45-minute podcast, is that you don't get a chance to really dig into the stories. Like TNT, sure. It'd always be you'd have these stories, you keep move on, have the stories move on, have the stories move on. And it never felt like you kept, you know, dig into it and say, well, what's the real meat here? You kind of would go over it and it was still fun. It wasn't bad. It just would always be like, I wish I could hear more of Darren Kitchen talking about X, Y, or Z.
Which is good because you always want to leave people wanting more.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was always something that I know they're never going to talk about the story again unless it comes back in the news cycle and it becomes something bigger than it is and that's the only time, whatever. But when it comes to Daily Tech News now, you essentially will, you know, go through headlines, do that kind of thing, and then have the story you're going to dig into. And that story will get digged into more, and you'll take it to the length. And I really dig that fact because it's something, you know, when it comes to tech news, a lot of it is just sort of noise. A lot of it is just whatever's happening the day, you know, whatever social media thing is happening. I mean, we're here at South by Southwest, and all of it is noise.
Yeah, it's echo chamber stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so when you're able to – you know, analyze and that's where you get the journalism, you know.
Well, I don't know that I call it journalism simply because I don't want to bring that comparison on because I don't do original reporting. I don't talk to sources for the most part. And that's what journalism is. Journalism is chasing down the stories. And when you do that, that's time intensive and it deserves the respect that people give to real journalists. But what we do is analysis on Daily Tech News Show. And I think that's what you're saying is that sort of – it's punditry, but it can be done well and it can be done badly. And hopefully we're doing it well.
I think you guys are doing great.
One of the advantages I have now being a solo host is having a guest on and only having that guest to deal with, right? And that's not a slam on having multiple hosts. That is amazing to have multiple hosts and multiple perspectives. And it has an advantage that I don't have now in the fact that – I can only have my own perspective and that of my guest. But the flip side is I'm able to dive in a little more with that guest and say, well, what do you really think about this and take a little more time?
Well, because the tricky part is whenever you have no matter what your podcast is, and I've learned this when I've had multiple guests on the show, the tricky part is making sure you feel as sort of the host or the, you know, core kind of controller of the conversation that everybody's had a chance to say what they want to say.
You don't want to shut anybody out.
Right. And it's difficult because – sometimes nobody has anything to say on that topic.
Right. And you have to guess.
And you have to kind of guess and
are
say,
are they holding back?
Yes.
Or are they just don't have anything to
and
say?
And it's tricky. Yeah. And so it's a lot easier to have just that one person there, have them speak, you say your part, have them speak again, and be able to do that.
I've had a couple of guests tell me, like, wow, this was actually much more free-flowing than being on other shows because I knew when to talk. And that's simply a matter of math. Like, yeah. When there's only one other person, you always know when it's your turn.
Exactly. And that's, again, you talk about having multiple hosts, getting multiple perspectives. That's fine and all. But it gets very – you have to literally almost go and say, I'm going to talk first. You know, like in TNT, it always is sort of way. I'm going to say – you know, the way it would always go is this. You'd say – hey, Sarah, what's that topic we're talking about next? Yeah. Well, this is the topic we're talking about next, Tom, and blah, 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 blah.
And then she'd throw it to the guest.
Yeah, guest, what do you think about this?
Because you
want
to give the guest the first crack.
Right. Well, let me tell you. Then Ayaz would chime in and do his thing, which is that's not bad. It's just
it's not
the formula.
And in fact, when I have multiple guests on Daily Tech News Show, that's the way it's done because that's the way you have to do it when you have multiple guests. Somebody has to direct traffic. So it's not a slam on that.
No. That's just the format it is.
A different way of doing it.
So then Daily Tech News comes in and it becomes a podcast. It does a thing. You'd already kind of said, hey, here's my feed from doing stuff like that. Then the interesting thing happens. It isn't so much the podcast. Podcast is interesting enough. But the interesting thing is you putting it on Patreon.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And how much is that up to right now, if you don't mind me asking?
I haven't looked today, but it's above 9,000 last time I looked.
It's over 9,000.
Yeah, per month.
How does that feel? I mean,
it feels incredibly rewarding.
Like I say that because
it's not even so much the amount, which is good because what that amount gets me, if we get to our milestone of 10,000, what the amount gets me is the ability to invest in the show, pay for its costs, things like bandwidth and all of that sort of thing, and pay Jenny, my producer, who is invaluable in making the show happen, and actually make a little money myself and keep the show going. The fact that we're getting that money is great, but what's more impressive to me is the number of people.
That's the what I'm trying to say.
3,000 plus people out of our audience, which is I think it's like 22, 23,000. It's hard to really pin it down, but that is an incredibly high percentage of people who are just on their own reconnaissance saying, yes, I will, for no other reason that I want to see this continue, give you at least $1 a month.
Then that's what I find the most rewarding about all this because, you know, whenever you leave a job, no matter what it is, it's leaving a steady income. It's leaving at least some type of
predictable security. Yeah,
right. You're leaving some type of an income of any kind, whether it be $100, $1,000, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's something you can say, well, every month I'm going to get X amount from this thing and move on.
Believe me, I know.
But then you doing this Patreon thing, it is very much the idea of throwing yourself into the crowd and hoping somebody catches you.
Yeah. And they have. And that's what I don't even feel most of the times that I deserve, but I'm glad that other people disagree with me and are like, yeah, no, this is worth it, because between the Patreon for Daily Tech News Show and Cord Killers, I am fine. I can continue to do my shows. And then I'm also doing a show for Tech Republic that's going to bring in a little extra to pay the bills. And of course, my wife has a steady job.
Right.
So, you know, I'm really blessed there that I don't have to worry. I don't have to panic.
No. And that's great. Cause again, that's all the fears from the fans. It's not because, you know, you just make content. For a lot of people, you have kind of touched their lives. You have been in their, you know, and the idea that you leaving Twit, you know, truth be told, there was a lot of people who weren't happy about that. And we're very vocal about that sort of thing. A lot of people got very angry on every side. You know, drama is drama and everything else. But the point of that being is because to them, you have been that kind that, you know, no matter what, Tom will be doing TNT every day. And it's going to be something I'm listening to. It's something I'm looking forward to. That's how I consume my news. And you leaving kind of leaves that hole. And so when you had announced all this sort of stuff you're moving on, the idea of money – people want to see that happen because they don't – you know, it's – I've learned in geekdom that if geeks love something, they really don't want it to die.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we got Serenity. That's how we get everything we have.
I'm a brown coat.
I know how that I think goes. We all have brown coats here. But what I find really fascinating, actually, out of all this, to be honest, isn't so much that you're doing your independent stuff. That makes sense. You would have done that no matter what. It's not even the idea that you're getting paid for it by fans. It's the idea that, like, do you think, let's say 5 years ago, could this have happened?
It could have. And in fact, I'm trying to think when No Agenda started.
Yeah.
But
definitely. Yeah, because, like, what was the first podcast that did that?
Things like that have happened, but it wasn't as easy or established. That's the difference. And part of it is Patreon. I think what Jack Conte and friends are doing there is amazing. And a lot of people are like, oh, I want to give you money directly. I don't want to have to have Patreon take their cut. And I'm like, you guys don't know how easy Patreon makes this. Like,
yes.
We can do what Adam does, and I'm very respectful of the work that he puts into doing it, where, you know, you could send a check to Dvorak, or you can do a PayPal donation and all of that. That is a lot more work. And to do the reach out and the knighthoods and all the things they do takes a lot of building on their part. Patreon makes a lot of that stuff really easy and simple. And so, yes, they're going to take a bigger cut, but they also make things – you get something as a creator out of that. And 5 years ago, there also wasn't this mentality of Kickstarter, and this idea of crowdsourcing wasn't as fully formed. So – you could get people to do it, but it would have been a little harder to explain and get off the ground. Whereas I think Kickstarter particularly, and Indiegogo and others as well, have really laid the groundwork of people understanding, like, oh, I understand. I get it. Like,
yeah.
If I give a little money, I get something back. And maybe what I get back isn't a thing, but it's a podcast, or it's a little special access, or this and that.
Or credit or something
like
that.
Yeah, and I think the groundwork has been laid for this sort of thing to be a lot more successful than it would have been 5 years ago, for sure.
But it's not like, again, when you say, you know, yes, you can do it your own, it's not like PayPal's not taking a cut.
Yeah, no, PayPal takes a cut. Actually,
Everyone, like ultimately,
The cut that Patreon takes is 5%, and then the cut on top, and then on top of that, they charge you the credit card fee.
Right.
PayPal charges you a larger credit card fee to do it themselves.
Yeah. So it's not like, you know, people ultimately want. And I think that shows what the mentality is now. You mentioned the whole idea of Kickstarter and crowdfunding is that we're now in a different mentality than we were, I would say, 5 years ago, maybe a little bit more. That, you know, because the mentality, you know, 5 years ago was everything's got to be free. You know, it's all ad supported. There's no, you know, no one's going to pay for this stuff.
Yeah. And I don't. And that's what's interesting about Kickstarter and Patreon is that they're not saying it's you have to pay for access. They're saying pay to support it, and it will still be out there. And Cord Killers and Daily Tech News Show both make all of the content free to anybody, whether they support it or not. And Patreon doesn't have a problem with that.
No, of course not.
It's more that idea of value for value that Adam Curry pretty much pioneered.
Well, I mean, it's you're the patron of the arts, you know.
Yeah.
It is the classic medieval sort of thing of that. What is – I guess my next kind of question, especially, you know, when we talk about things like this, because I have a weird theory. I know you in Daily Tech News, you guys haven't taken any ads, and I know you've been kind of not adamant per se, but it's not been something you've wanted to do.
Well, I've been wanting to see if we need to take them. And with advertising, I have no dogmatic feeling about it.
Okay.
Taking money from anybody is going to affect your show. Taking money from Patreon is going to affect your show because you're going to have to pay attention to the people who are giving you money on Patreon.
Right.
Right? I mean, they have a right to ask you things about the show, and you have to pay attention to them. If an advertiser is sponsoring your show, they have a right to say, hey, I want you to read the ad this way or that way. And they have the right to pull their ads if they don't like your show for whatever reason.
Absolutely.
So – you know, what Leo Laporte has been great about is figuring out a way to minimize the risk of advertising, saying, I'm only going to take ads I believe in. I'm going to make a personal recommendation, and I'm going to be able to work with the advertisers to form that message. But nobody can escape the fact that if they're paying for it, there is an influence there. So all I've been doing is saying, well, if I can limit the influences, then that's more independence. So I'm going to take money from the audience because I'm going to be –
That's exactly
why. I
want
the audience to have an influence anyway.
Like that seems like them paying for it and you're dearing it. So you would have done that normally anyways.
That's an okay influence even if it privileges the – it does privilege some of the voice of the people who are giving over the people who aren't.
But the voice –
And that may be unfair.
Yeah.
But I think it's a lesser unfairness than other unfairnesses. And if we can just do that, then that's it.
Well, because the
and
voice
we're totally independent of any other influence.
Yeah.
We might have to take advertising on any of these shows at some point. And if we have to, we have to. I'm not dogmatic against
it. No.
But if we can do it without, and if I can self-advertise, then I think that's the ideal situation. Because if I can self-advertise, A, I'm not actually giving influence to somebody else outside of the show. And B, if you respond to an advertiser on a show, let's say you spend $20 on their product, well, most of the money is going to go to the advertiser. Only a small part of what you spend goes to the show that you heard the advertisement on. If you self-advertise, in other words, like on Brian Brushwood's show on Scam School, if his advertiser was Scam Stuff and you respond to Scam Stuff, he gets the money from Scam Stuff.
Yep.
Nobody else does. And so if on Daily Tech News show and I say, buy a shirt, that's the sponsor of the show, then I get the money from the shirt. Nobody else does. So that's a more efficient model.
Now, it's funny you bring up that. There's actually a really cool post on Patreon on their blog where they show a really good infographic of here's how much money an actual YouTuber gets from an ad. And they actually explain the ideas of, you know, cost per mille and all the things that people don't really know about advertising. The, you know, per thousand views, you get maybe $2 at the most.
I mean, I actually turn on the overlay ads on my YouTube videos because I feel they're fairly non-intrusive and I get tens of dollars a month from those advertisements.
You can buy many a beer with that.
Yes, the beer I'm drinking right now is paid for, and that was all of February.
What I like about the fact, like you mentioned the whole idea of privileged people being the ones that – what I feel is the ones that are giving you Patreon money are the ones that are most committed to the podcast.
Yes,
they're the
and
passionate
no.
ones.
I think mostly that's true, but there are very passionate – I don't want to overlook the people who are very passionate who are like – I can't afford to because I don't have a good job or I'm in between jobs right now. I can't afford it. And so there is a privileging to like, oh, you're in the circumstances where you can afford to do it. That's part of the reason that my ask is only a nickel a day and a dollar a month, because I feel like that includes the most amount of people without leaving people out.
But still, it's, you know, if you're giving money, it's the guys who care the most.
Yeah.
Like they're the ones that are willing to say – Shut up and take my money.
The people who want to give the money are definitely the people who care the most, and most of them can.
See, now, with me and ads, I do have a dogmatic approach, but not so much as I think they're bad.
Uh-huh.
I have a fear that someday soon this whole ad-supported concept is going to completely shift. Like, as we have bigger people come in, as we have the NBCs, the ABCs, the people who have really, really good connections with advertisers, and two, have a lot of programs that a lot of people watch, as they move those online, I have a very big fear that those advertisers that normally would have put money in sort of these smaller podcasts will completely shift. And what I feel Patreon is doing and kind of showing as an idea that – if we care about the content that we want and we're willing to make sure we get that content, that we will pay for it. We are willing to give, you know, $5, $10 a month, whatever. Not because, yes, we want to see you succeed. Yes, we want to support you and everything else. But we want to make sure that the content that we love dear is still going to be out there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have that same fear or not.
I don't worry about it that much because – I feel like it's a good problem to have, honestly. I think that advertising in the future is hard to predict. I don't know that we'll know exactly how it's going to go. I'm not saying you're unreasonable. Because we've definitely seen that sort of thing happen before.
And that's,
But I also think that the landscape is changing so fast that I wouldn't want to lay great odds on there being an NBC. Necessarily in the future.
Okay.
Or at least in the form that it is in today.
Right, and that's what I mean.
And so I think what's going to happen is the advertisers are out there. They're looking for places to spend money. we should be so lucky that we have so much money in podcasting that we worry that it would disappear. It's there's not that much advertising to go around anyway, right?
Right.
Now. And so any my own like assessment of that comes right back to your same point, which is for those who are out like, yeah, I can't even get advertising now. You've got Patreon as a way to say, well, if you have an audience of any size, you can appeal to them to say, hey, I can't get advertising and I can't do this show anymore if I can't get advertising unless you guys put a value on the show that you want to give back to the show.
Well, even then you start to get with Patreon a lot of the guys that have smaller audiences but have really engaged audiences.
Yes, exactly.
That's the ones that are succeeding. You, Tom Tom Merritt, you, Brian Brushwood, Justin Robert Young. I know the guys over there at Frog Pants
Scott Johnson.
The Morning Stream.
Yeah, yeah.
They're doing well. Like all these guys are now coming out of the woodwork and not asking for money because they need money. There's like, hey, we're still going to
support
this.
The show. Yeah.
Right. And people are like, hell yeah, we want to support the show. I don't want to see this die. I know we're kind of almost out of time, mainly because this is going to be a bit shorter of an interview.
Also because Veronica Belmont gave me the stink eye.
Yeah, exactly. Get back here. Like, I'm taking too much Tom time. But I will ask you one last and final question. As we enter 2014, as we now have a new home for a lot of the content that we in terms of Chat Realm, we in terms of myself, and even we in terms of geeks, like that being DiamondClub.tv, what's going to happen next? Like, is the idea going to be that, is it going to become like a network? Is it going to be just this sort of loose affiliation co-op? Is it going to be whatever it happens to be? The idea goes, essentially, when are we going to take over the world?
Your question makes me want to go VI tab.
Yes. Yeah.
And then see Vincent 404 autocomplete and type it. Because I feel like that is a question meant directly for the Chat Realm. I don't know what is going to happen, but I know what we want. I've thought a lot about this, and I'm not even sure how much Brian or Justin or anybody else would agree with me on this. My approach is not where do we want to go and how do we get there, and I really think that's Brian's approach, and that's a great approach. Like, being goal-driven is awesome, and right. I'm not saying a word against it.
No, no,
but my approach a lot of the time is, what tools do I have around me, and how can I make the best use of them? Rather than shooting for a goal, figuring out what I can do with what I've got and improve on it. And the key there is not being settled like, this is all I have, so this is all I can do, because that's what a lot of people think when you say that. It's more like, what can I make out of what I have available that's fantastic?
Well, it's like the Robert Rodriguez approach when it came to El Mariachi.
That's what I feel about DiamondClub.tv, which is, hey, Brian and Justin have decided to go independent. Veronica is independent. I am independent. Andrew Main is not entirely independent, but he's also independent.
Yeah.
I guess Brian's not either, but he's also independent.
We all have different
horses. We're all doing these independent projects, and we're all friends. Like, how can we pull in the same direction to help each other? And we have this shared audience in Chat Realm.
Yeah.
How can we give them a place that's easy to find us if we're all in different places? And so maybe it becomes a network someday. I really don't want it to be. And I'm on record with these guys saying, like, I'm not interested in forming a management and a network. What I'm interested in is saying to people, hey, if you like what we all do, here's the place to find it.
That's what I'm trying to say. When I say network, I don't necessarily mean like hey, this is, like Frog Pants is a network.
I actually had a really good conversation with Scott Johnson about it the other day. We're like, Frog Pants is going to be one of those people where it's like, Frog Pants is a network, a proper network that I'm a member of in many cases. But then on Diamond Club TV, they can be a person that's involved in that too, where that's independent. That's like, here, some of our network stuff can show up on Diamond Club TV because we have an audience that wants to see it. And for Chat Realm, it's like, here's your one home to play. And we will give the remote to people sometimes and entrust them with putting things up there. And we'll see how it goes. Like, it may be a ridiculous notion that we can be like totally federal and somewhat anarchic in the approach. But I'm very curious to see what results we have and what we learn from it.
I'm not going to lie, these are exciting times.
Yeah.
When Brian told me about Diamond Club TV, I thought it was the coolest and best idea. I was so thrilled.
It was a New Year's Day conversation that Brian and Justin and I had. And honestly, maybe these guys remember, and I don't, who had the idea. But all I remember was we were talking and talking and talking, and suddenly we were talking about DiamondClub.tv as a thing that we should make happen. And all credit to Justin and Brian for going to Dan Dirks and saying, hey, we need you to make this, and making it a reality. That's amazing.
Well, again, it happening, just it being in existence and seeing you guys kind of come together and, you know, form, you know, the League of Podcasters, the Justice League. You know, it's very much like – actually more like the X-Men, I think.
The League of Extraordinary Podcasters.
Well, I was going to say it's more like the X-Men because, you know – or how does it? I'm bad with comic book references, so I'm going to just stop right there.
It could be Avengers.
It could be Avengers. It's some – whatever it is, I am so glad.
We don't obey a Nick Fury.
No, you don't. That would be great if you guys had a Nick Fury, though. Who would be the Nick Fury of podcasting?
Will Harris.
I don't know. That would be awesome. Can we have that happen?
I don't know.
Can you give Will a call and say, Will, can you please like dress up like Nick Fury?
Can you be
please?
Black?
No, like that. Just like classic, like Hasselhoff Nick Fury.
Oh, got you. Yes. Totally.
Yes. I want that to happen now. Tom, thank you so much for being on. Where can people find you online, man?
I am at tommerritt.com. It's 2 R's, 2 T's. And on Twitter, you can find Tom Merritt, and then find my real Twitter address if you really care. It's referenced
detect.
In there. Ace Detect, yeah.
Which I always love that you've kept that all these years. Because people that, like, I know Jason Howell switched his to Jason Howell.
If you really want to follow me on Twitter, you have to work for it.
That sounds great. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 on the Twitter. So you want to comment this podcast, talk about your fun experiences, go to our website, cosmonaut.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find links to show notes, previous episodes, and of course, everything else around this little 8-bit world of mine. And my other podcasts, such as Jump Point, my gaming podcast I do with Bryce. So the show for day two next week, I talk to another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.